Okay, good afternoon. I'd like to switch gears a little bit and talk about falls in older people. This is the signature building at the University of Pittsburgh, the Cathedral of Learning. I'm told it's the tallest classroom building in North America, with 42 floors. We don't have anything to disclose. I'd like to thank our funders, CDC, the CER program. Also remind people that this is our interpretation of the data. And at the bottom is the most important thing, really. It's all our partners. The Pennsylvania Department of Aging was a central partner to this research because we're evaluating a statewide falls prevention intervention, which I think could qualify as a primary prevention effort. We're also partnering with the PACE program, which in Pennsylvania is a pharmaceutical assistance program. And we have merged our data with the PACE program, so we know something about all the medications a subset of our people are taking. We also, because of a data sharing agreement with the Department of Aging, know the universe of people who were reached by the falls prevention program we're studying, and we can assess how representative our sample is to the universe. So let me begin with a little background. Falls and age. Here's a statement from the National Council on Aging. They remind us that falls are the leading cause of injury-related deaths of older adults, the primary reason for older adult injury emergency department visits, and the most common cause of hospital admissions for trauma. That's all true, but it really underestimates the effect of falling. A fall, as one geriatrician remarked once, is a major event in the life of an older person. It means social isolation. It means activity restriction. It means fear of mobility. It can mean depression. It's the spillover effects of a fall are quite severe. So while we are looking at the health service utilization most of the time, it's a much bigger event. Let me give you some of the data about falling. This is from the CDC Whiskers system. You can get this on the web and make wonderful graphs. These are fall injuries per 100,000 people per year. And you can see the strong age determination of fall risk. And when it comes to injuries that put you in the emergency department, women are much more likely to fall and end up in the emergency department than men. Keep that in mind for a minute, because when it comes to deaths from falls, it's the reverse. But here, let me just show you something that I think is very notable and one reason why we wanted to do this research. We really have an increasing incidence of falls-related emergency department episodes. I don't know if you can make out the colors, but with each year, the number of older people falling is increasing. The shape of the curve is the same, not surprisingly, but we're having a couple of thousand per 100,000 additional falls that put people in the emergency department with each year. And now I'm going to switch gears and ask for audience participation. Does anybody have a thought why that might be? I think of it as sort of the hazards of success. We're enabling older people to do more, and we encourage them to do more, and they're healthy enough to do more. But guess what? One consequence of that is an increase in injuries. So for the first time, we have traumatic brain injury in 70 or 80-year-olds who are bicycling. And we have to start thinking about public health in that bigger sense. Here's what I promised you, just a little bit of role reversal. When it comes to deaths from falling, men are more likely to have that experience, and that's because men fall differently. They're often on ladders and doing some other things like that. So we decided to work with our state Department of Aging on a program they're very strongly committed to called Healthy Steps for Older Adults. It's a very light intervention. It involves a mass program offered in senior centers, and here's some of the statistics on that. Nearly all Pennsylvania counties have participated in the program at some point or another since 2007. Each year, between 4,000 and 7,000 seniors go through the program. Over 25,000 now have completed the program. And it has a very interesting design. Its physical performance assessments of balance and mobility are conducted at senior sites, mostly senior centers. And lay people and staff at these senior centers are trained by shock troops of health promotion through the Department of Aging, a group called Primetime Health, which are mostly retired nurses. And anyone scoring in the lowest third on one of the three tests gets a referral for physician care and home safety assessment. Now, the three tests are the time, get up, and go, a one-legged stand, and chair stand. Standard tests of mobility and balance. Anybody can learn to do them. And the nice thing about this is we have age and gender-based norms for each test. They go through these assessments. They're given referrals if they need them. They have lunch. Then they have a two-hour falls prevention education program. And that's really simply designed to heighten people's sensitivity to fall risk situations. There is an optional exercise program which we're evaluating in a different part of the study, which I'm not talking about today. And for the purposes of research, a nice feature of the system is that the state has a standard web-based system to enter all the data from these assessments. So we went to those senior centers and enrolled people. Let me give you a few diagnostics about our recruitment effort. In this very tight timeline that you've heard about from these CER studies, we started in October 2010. We had our full complement in by about October or so of 2011, and the last person will complete 12 monthly follow-ups by October 2012, which is now. So we're at just about the end of the line in our data collection. We went to senior centers and consented about 2,200 people. We enrolled about 1,837 subsequently. We had a very elaborate consent procedure where we made presentations, got contact information, called these people, mailed them a consent form, they mailed it back, and then they were eligible for the baseline interview. Here's our consort chart just to show you everybody who we approached. And the main thing I think you should draw from this is we have a group that took healthy steps for older adults, and we have a comparator. And this is a quasi-experiment. This is not a random assignment. We went to these senior centers and enrolled people at the same senior center at the same time throughout the state, and we're not really able to randomly assign people to the healthy steps condition or the comparator, but they were all people enrolled from the same sites at the same time. Another interesting wrinkle of our study is the program is really designed for first time. You're not supposed to take it twice. But through our CER project, we allowed a set of people to take it a second time because we have additional hypotheses about the cumulative impact of this falls prevention effort. So let me just show you one more, just to show you that we really did crisscross the state. As I've said, we went from Erie to Philadelphia and from Pittsburgh to Scranton and many places in between. We have many, many rural counties where I think we were the first researchers they'd ever seen. So, I've already presented some of our findings from this research, and I wasn't going to go into them today, though perhaps I should have, but let me give you the 30-second story about it. We were able to compare our sample to the universe and didn't find any big differences. We also were able to compare our Healthy Steps group to the comparator, and they were quite comparable. And we also found that among people completing the program, we did see a benefit to the program. For those people reporting fair or poor balance, they were about 18 months of falls out of every 100 if you didn't take the program, and about 14 falls per 100 months of follow-up for people who did. So we think there's some good evidence, and we have a number of manuscripts about to be reviewed in this area. But one thing that we never did well before was to look at the outcome in more detail, and that's what I would like to talk about today. So here's the basic scheme of our study. We have in-person interviews at the baseline, at 6 months, and at 12 months, and at this point we're just about done with all this. We have monthly interviews for those people who came into the study. Every month we called people to see if they had fallen in the last 30 days. We ideally would have liked everybody to have an IVR interview, an interactive voice recognition interview, where once people sign up for the study, they're registered in a web-based system. The computer automatically dials them every 30 days a human voice establishes that it is the person we need to speak to, and then goes into a very brief call, 6 questions. So the first one would be, think of the last 30 days. Did you fall in the past 30 days? If yes, press 1. If no, press 2 on the phone. And it worked quite well. Over 2/3 of the interviews we did were completed by the IVR. But we also recognized that some people might not want to participate in the IVR. So, for example, our Spanish speakers, we never enrolled them in the IVR system. Likewise, people who had hearing problems or people who just didn't feel comfortable with an automated voice, we gave them a chance to do the special in-person interview, which is really a telephone interview. And we found in the course of the follow-up that after a number of these calls, some people got tired of it and wanted to switch to the special in-person. So if someone did report a fall on their monthly interview, we automatically got an email through the IVR system and then followed up with a research assistant calling to get the details of that fall. And likewise, if during our in-person telephone follow-up someone reported a fall, we did that detailed interview about the circumstances of falls. So that's basically what we did. Here's a screenshot of the IVR system. It's really wonderful. The people are automatically enrolled to get called, and you can watch the calls being completed on your computer. It's really amazing. We set up at the beginning of this study to call people 3 times a day for up to 3 weeks. And somewhere along the line, after a lot of complaints, we reduced it to 8 days. 8 days of calls, skipping Sunday, twice a day. But it was extraordinary. Most people who would complete the call completed it in the first 1 or 2 days, or else we rarely got them after that. But the compliance rate I'm going to show you in a minute was fantastic. Older adults are the most compliant research subjects. One of the most extraordinary experiences we had with this system required an unanticipated protocol deviation report to our IRB. Well, when we register someone in the system, it's based on the phone number a consented respondent gives to us. What if they give you the wrong phone number and you enter that into the web-based system? Well, this happened once out of 1,837 people, and we had the wrong phone number. And Mrs. So-and-so completed 4 monthly follow-ups before she got mad at us, just to give you an idea of the compliance level among these older adults. It's really quite extraordinary. So this is a terrific system. We were able to do it very inexpensively, and there's no way we could have followed over 1,800 people over 12 months of monthly follow-up without such a system. So let me just show you a few features of the cohort. It was about 80% women, about 8% African-American, 3% Hispanic, average age of about 75, not a highly educated sample. A higher than expected number live alone. I think that's the senior center population. About 5% were receiving paid in-home services. About 27% were getting the medication, the pharmaceutical assistance program support that I mentioned a little while ago. About 16% reported some distress in income. We built in a memory screen in our baseline interview, and we think about 6% of the sample is demented, but they were able to complete the interview, and about 38% reported some mobility problems by self-report, 6% a problem with activities of daily living, and extraordinarily to me, over 97% completed some follow-up, and as of a month or two ago, we had a median of 9 months of follow-up on these people. Really quite impressive. So this is basically what we got at the end of the day. About 900, or half the sample, did all their follow-up in the interactive voice recognition system. About 20% did all their follow-up in the in-person monthly interview, and a group had a mix because they switched over at some point out of fatigue or whatever. And to me, one of the most interesting things about this is if people got, you know, I think most people were willing to do the automated call. We did some diagnostics. It takes about 2.5 minutes. It's 6 questions. We ask about falls. We ask about physical activity level. We ask about emergency department use, hospitalization, And then would they like a call from the research team? It takes 2.5 minutes on average. And you can see here that the fall-off rate from that automated call was under 5% at every monthly interview, except at month 5. It seemed that there was a group of people who had enough after about 5 months of calls. And this is the cumulative switch from the IVR system to the in-person call. And there was a bump up right about here. But at the end of the day, still, about 60% completed all their calls cumulatively through on the IVR system. And we were interested also to see if there were any differences by their kind of willingness to participate in these interviews. And, you know, you might expect, the folks who preferred the in-person calls were a bit older, a little more likely to be minority, less likely to live alone, showing greater frailty perhaps, a little less well-educated, a little more likely to have some disability, and a little poorer memory score. So I would say in a large cohort study like this, it's still important to have the in-person option, but I think a judicious mix is reasonable. What about ascertaining falls, which is our key focus of this study? I was very pleased to see that the ascertainment of falling was about the same in the two groups. And the reports of hospitalization are consistent and in the right direction. Remember, the in-person telephone contact group is a little more frail. So the people who fell, about 8% reported a hospitalization compared to about 6% here. But I think everything is in the right direction. Here, the people who fell reported about 18% had an emergency department admission in that month. And the same pattern we're getting in the IVR group. One thing that might be off is our people who are responding on the in-person might overestimate their activity levels a little bit, and that's something to think about. But on the whole, in this sample here, people who reported a fall really were less active physically in the prior week. And these are days, 5.1 days versus 4.7 days. So we think the IVR system is a very good way for an automated registration of falls and very effective part of the armamentarium for primary falls prevention research. So to conclude, we had very high compliance, about 81% completed one or more IVR calls, and about 60% completed all follow-up by IVR over 12 months. It might be a little more likely to be acceptable to older adults with better function, so we do feel there's still a need for the personal call option. And it seems to be as good at ascertaining falls as the in-person contact. So we thought this was very valuable. One thing that we've gone on to do since is use these data to qualify the program for Title IIID funding from the Administration on Aging. There's a new requirement at the Administration on Aging that Older Americans Act funding requires an evidence-based program, and we were pleased to see that the AOA has now recognized Healthy Steps for Older Adults as an evidence-based program based on our CER study. So I just would like to thank the large cast of characters involved in this research. We had to have a great research interviewing team and shock troops who went out there and recruited folks. And we have our PRC executive team, plenty of support from the PA Department of Aging and the PA PRACE program, and also a lot of support from our CDC colleagues. Thank you very much.